All right, so we'll say let's continue. Just when you thought they couldn't get better, after finishing Perek Beis of Mesilas Yesharim, we come to Daf Chaf Gimel and Maseches Erechin. We'll say we begin from the Mishnah. Hamakdish Nechasa. First of all, Shiurim this morning, this month, are dedicated by our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Tammuz, Uncle Mike Holtzman, the Shikoch, for the sponsorship. And with that, let's begin. Hamakdish Nechasa. We will say if a person goes, it's actually a very interesting case. A person is Makdish his property, right? They consecrate my property. V'hoi salof ksuvasisha. And I will say, what happens over here is I have an obligation for a ksuvas. I've done something very interesting. I always tell this to, whenever I have this chus in the Sadek Kiddushin, I go over with the chasen, the ksuva at the chasen's tish. I always explain to him that a ksuva is fundamentally different than any other financial obligation. Whereas financial obligations generally only devolve upon that which you own at the time the liability is generated, a ksuva devolves upon anything you do own and you ever will own. There's no other instrument like this that we have in halacha. So we'll say, a man has a ksuva obligation upon him. And what happens? He's makdish, he consecrates all of his property. Now what happens? He's going to divorce his wife. So we'll say, so the issue over here is, just to be clear, the ksuva obligation really pre-exists the hekdish. So what's the halacha? Rabbi Lezer Omer, kishi yigarshena yidor hana. So Beloza says, okay, so what happens, Rabbi Say, is he's going to divorce his wife, and she's going to go ahead and extract the ksuva from Hekdish. Again, we'll discuss the mechanism of that in just a bit. But Rabbi Beloza comes along and says, there's another step. He has to make a neder that he's never going to get any benefits from Rabbi Say, which effectively means he makes a neder that they will never again remarry. Why does he have to make such a neder like this? So it says, we're going to see the issue that Rabbi Elazar has is we're concerned that the husband and wife are going to conspire with each other. What's the conspiracy here? They're going to get divorced, quote unquote. She's going to collect her ksuva, ultimately again, from where? From Hekdish. And then what's going to happen? They're going to get remarried. And Baruch Hashem, they already have a paid for honeymoon. Right? Honeymoon has been sponsored by the Beis HaMikdash. So in order to ensure that there's no type of conspiracy like this that occurs, we make him take a neder that they're not going to remarry. Rabbi Yoshua Omer Eino Tzarech. Rabbi Yoshua says, no such neder is necessary. Ki Yotzei Badavar. Similarly, Omer Shimon Gamliel. Af ha'arev li'isha b'ksuvasa. It was the same idea. If, let's say, a man has a guarantor for his ksuva, right? So meaning, we'll say, so again, Reuven's married, right? We'll call it Yaakov's married to Rachel. And what happens? They have a guarantor for the ksuva. Let's say, you know, Reuven's guaranteeing the ksuva. So what happens? Now Yaakov wants to divorce Rachel. So Rabbi Yeshua, so the Gemara says, Rabbi Shem Amniel says, same idea. Af ha'ariv li'isha b'ksuva, so v'haya baila megarsha. So now again, Yaakov wants to divorce Rachel. So what happens? Yadirena hana'a shema ya'ase kinunya al nechasim shalzeh v'yachzir es ishto. So both say, Rabbi Shem Amniel says the same idea over here as well. That if there is a guarantor regarding the ksuva, then halacha l'maisa what? Halacha l'maisa, we're concerned for, again, some type of conspiracy between the husband and the wife. That the goal would be that he's going to divorce his wife, and as a result, she's going to collect the ksuva. They're looking to defraud the guarantor, and then they're going to remarry each other with this newfound money. But remember, again, as long as you're not a kohen, there is no problem with remarrying the woman you divorced, as long as she did not marry someone else in the interim. So if Rabbi say, we have ultimately, again, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Shimon Amiel saying that halacha l'maisa, any situation where either the money is held by the Beis HaMikdash or the ksuva is guaranteed by a guarantor, halacha l'maisa, we make the husband make a neder not to remarry his wife in order to avoid any potential kinunya, any potential scheming that may be going on over here between man and woman. On the other hand, you have Rabbi Yoshua who says it's not necessary. So let's analyze. So we'll say, what are Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua arguing about? So again, remember, focusing on the first case of the Mishnah. A man, we'll call it Yaakov, marries Rachel. afterwards, Yaakov is makdish his property to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, obviously, his wife Rachel's claim against the property pre-exists the Hegdish. As such, when they get divorced, she, like any creditor, would have the ability to go to the Beis HaMikdash and say, give me my ksuva property, or give me some payments for my ksuva. No problem, she's entitled to do that. Rabbi Eliezer says, halacha lamaisa, when Reuven divorces his wife, he must make a neder that he's never going to remarry her. Rabbi Yoshua says, it's not necessary. What are the arguments? My coming for the gi. Rabbi Eliezer, savar adam osekinun ya'ala hekdish. Rabbi Eliezer says, people scheme against hekdish. As much as we would like to think that although people cheat each other, no one would ever cheat the Beis HaMikdash, people cheat. People cheat, and people even cheat the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, again, Rabbi Eliezer will say, you have to take this step in order to protect the Beis HaMikdash from any type of fraud. Therefore, make the husband swear, make a neder, that he's not going to remarry his wife. Rabbi Yoshua Savar, Ein Adam Osek Min Yala Hekdish. Rabbi Yoshua, on the other hand, holds that no, a person does not scheme against Hekdish. And therefore, Halacha L'maisa, again, although people scheme against each other, and although people defraud one another, people don't scheme or defraud Hekdish. And therefore, Halacha L'maisa, such a neder is unnecessary. I ve elahad do amrav huna. We'll say, what about the following case? Shchiv mira shekdish kol mechasav. We'll say, let's say a shchiv mira, which is a person on his deathbed, is makdish all of his property. He's makdish his entire estate. Va amr mana leploni biyadi. And we'll say, listen to this. After he's makdish his property, he says, oh, and by the way, there's a mana belonging to Reuven in my property. So we'll say, what he's effectively done is as follows. On one hand, he's given everything to the Beis HaMikdash, but now he's pulled something back from the Beis HaMikdash and said that it doesn't belong to the Beis HaMikdash, and in fact belongs to Reuven. What's the halacha? Ne'eman, he is believed. Chazaka ein osek kinunya ala hegdish. Because we'll say, why? Why is the Shechid Mirah believed in such a situation? Because we assume that although people cheat one another, people don't cheat the Beis HaMikdash. That's, we'll say, human nature, right? We'll say, you know, it's an interesting part of human nature. You know, everyone has that avera that I would never do that, right? I'll do everything else, right? But I'll never, it's human nature, is that we all have a line that we won't cross, or at least we think we won't cross. Sometimes we end up crossing it, right? But we all draw that line. Now, where we draw that line, how we draw that line, everyone has. So again, so the Gemara thing over here is people cheat, and people cheat all of the time. But people don't cheat the Beis HaMikdash. I would never do such a thing like that. So I'll say, so here you see that apparently, L'divrei HaKol, people don't cheat the Beis HaMikdash. Le'ima ketana amar l'shmaite. So we're saying that again, this Mishnah is only stated in accordance with one opinion, to which the Gemara says, lo. Ad kan lo pligi ela bebari. I will say, the machlokes about if people cheat the Beis HaMikdash, there is such a machlokes, but that machlokes only applies to healthy people. Ava b'shchiv mira, divrei hakol ein adam osek nunya ala hekdish. I will say, listen to this. So when it comes to healthy people, there's a machlokes, do healthy people cheat the Beis HaMikdash or not? But everyone agrees that people who are on their deathbed don't cheat the Beis HaMikdash. That's the assumption. Then Rabbi Yosef, you'll say to yourself, okay, what's the logic over here? So we would say the logic is because, you know what? I guess when you're dying, there are certain new lines you won't cross. When you're dying, you'll still cheat someone else, but you won't cheat the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, the Gemara says, that's not the Svara. My time, we'll listen to this. Ein adam chote velolo. Rabbi Yosef, the logic of it is, people sin, and people sin all of the time. But we assume, when do people sin? People only sin when there's something in it for them. In other words, I'll sin when I get some kind of benefit. But people don't sin just for the sake of sinning. Say if Rabbi said, the Shechid Mirah is going to die. So when he goes in, he says, I hereby consecrate all of my property. Alan, anyone else? We need to get one of you over here. Sit down, come on. I was gonna say, so it's only people in your immediate arm reach. You can't start with Eric Schaefer over there. That's So interestingly enough, the Gemara says over here something fascinating. People only sin, and this is, by the way, this is an incredible psychology of chet. People don't sin because they're bad. It's very important you saw that Chazal understood. People don't sin because they're bad. People sin because they want to benefit in some way. In other words, people are human beings for the most part. Are utilitarian sinners. I committed an aver not because I want to rebel against God, not because I'm a bad guy, not because I want to hurt you. I sin because I perceive some type of benefit. That's why when there is no benefit, at my core, I'm a good guy. I'm not going to sin. When the Shechimira is dying. The Shechimira is dying. There's no benefit he's going to have from sinning. As such, we assume he doesn't sin. So when he says, all of my property belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, but there's a mana that belongs to Reuven, we take him at his word. We take him at his word. Why? Because there's no incentive for him to sin. The man is about to die. So therefore, we'll say, however, the reason why this is important is because we are assuming, however, that the Machlokes in the Mishnah is regarding a healthy person, and healthy people do sin, and healthy people even try to defraud the Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, in this case, where ultimately a man consecrates his entire estate to the Beis HaMikdash, then gets divorced, there is a concern that he and his wife are colluding to go ahead and defraud the Beis HaMikdash. She's going to get her ksuva payment. They're going to remarry. And mazel tov, they have a brand new nest egg, right? Courtesy of the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, again, so that's the machlokes. Do we assume that people collude to defraud the Beis HaMikdash or not? Rabbi Eliezer saying yes. Therefore, the only way to prevent collusion and fraud is to make the husband make a neder that he will never again go ahead and remarry his wife. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says, we're not concerned. People don't defraud the Beis HaMikdash. Ikudam, other possibilities. Babari, when it comes to a healthy person, Tichuli Amalo Pligi Adam Osekininya Ala Hekdish. So I'll say the alternate version of this discussion. When it comes to a healthy person, we assume everyone agrees that people cheat and they even cheat the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say, what's the machlokes over here? B'hacha b'neder shehuda b'rabim kamiflagi. So we'll say here, the fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah is regarding the effectiveness of a neder shehuda b'rabim. And we'll say neder shehuda b'rabim means a vow that was administered publicly. Mar Savar Yesh Lo Hafara. So we'll say one opinion says such a neder has revocation. Such a neder has revocation. We'll say that would be the opinion of Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua says even a publicly administered neder can be revoked. If it can be revoked, then what? Then what? Then it doesn't really serve any good. That it doesn't prevent fraud. If it doesn't prevent fraud, then don't bother with it. Umar Savar Ein Lo Hafara. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says, no, a publicly administered neder cannot be revoked. And therefore, Allah Almighty, if you administer to the husband under these circumstances, you could prevent them from defrauding the Beis HaMikdash. Another possibility is just an alternate version. Everyone agrees in general that a publicly administered neder can be revoked. V'hachas, what's the discussion over here? V'hachas b'neder shehudr al-das rabim kamiflagi. Rabbi say here, the machlokes is regarding a neder shehudr al-das rabim. The Rabbi say, here's the distinction. Neder shehudr b'rabim means a neder that was administered in public. A neder shehudr al-das rabim means that it is a neder that is administered by the rabim. The Lashon of Rashi is sha'omrim lo nidur. The Rabbi say this is a neder that is generated. The rabbim, whoever the rabbim constitute, but the rabbim are the ones who tell the husbands to make the neder. One is a publicly made neder, and one is a neder made through the rabbim. Without getting into all technicalities now, so the Gemara says, "Ve'elohad amra meimar neder shud b'rabbim yesh la'afara." But yet that which Amemar said that a neder that is vowed in public has revocation. Al das rabim ein lo afara, but ultimately again, if it's through the das rosa, if it's a neder that is administered by the rabim, it does not have revocation. To which the Gemara says, lema ketanai amar l'shmaite. So if that's the case, again, is the Mishnah taking a side in this machlokes tanai v'su Rabbi Yeshua Omer eino tzarech, and furthermore, Rabbi Yeshua says it's not necessary. He really should say not eno tzarech, but rather such a neder will not be helpful. Elahacha b'sheila dehekdish kamiflagi. Rather, I will say here what they're arguing about is a different fundamental dispute. the concept of she'ila behekdish. We'll say, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. She'ila behekdish kumiflagi. This is actually quite interesting. Rabbi Eliezer Sover, ein nish'alan ala hekdish chamer. Let's listen to this. When you're makdish your property, so effectively what you're doing is, you're being mader, you're essentially vowing your property to the Beis HaMikdash. Does such a neder like that have revocation or not? Can you revoke, can you undo, can you unravel, or can you revoke a commitment to hekdish or not? Look at Rashi. That's what she'ila behekdish. Rashi says, Rabbi Elazar Savar, Rabbi Eliezer Savar, ein nishalan ala hekdish lachacham, v'afilu omer lachacham lo ladas kein adarti, v'hekdish ta'osu, afilu hachi ein chacham matir nidro. Hilchach, I'm just going to read a few lines of Rashi. Hilchach, zahamagarish es ishto behagdesho mischaret ve'ino motzi chacham shiyatirenu. Ulekach ose kinun yazu. Rabbi Yeshua Savar, so let's listen to this. Rabbi Eliezer holds that when you consecrate something to Hagdish, you cannot revoke or undo that. Right? Even if it turns out that it was a mistaken consecration. Like Rabbi say, what's an example of mistaken consecration? I'm in an especially generous mood, and I decide to consecrate my entire estate to the Beis HaMikdash. I just forget one minor detail, which is, I'm married. It happens, right? I'm married. I forget, right? Just for one minor detail, I'm married. So we'll say, so as such, again, it's not just me. There's another person who actually happens to have a lien against my property. So we'll say, what happens now when I show up to my local rabbi and I say, listen, I made a neder. I need you to help me. I need charat. I need you to help me get out of this. So Rabbi says, there is no undoing a neder to hekdish. There's no undoing it. So we'll say, because there's no undoing it, That's when I have to be concerned that what? Maybe husband and wife will conspire to extract the money from Hekdish. How will they conspire? By engaging in getting divorced, but they don't really want to get divorced. What are they want to get divorced, in order that what? She'll go, the wife will go and collect her ksuva from the Beis HaMikdash, and then what's their intention? To get remarried again. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer will say, because their only recourse over here is fraud, if they do get divorced, we're going to tell the husband, you have to take a neder, vowing that you will never again remarry your wife. That's Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Yeshua, on the other hand, holds no. Nish'alam lahagdish. The same way Rabbi say that anytime you undertake a vow, and it turns out that your vow was taken under mistaken pretenses, that you could undo and unravel that vow, Hekdish is no different. Therefore, if a man is makdish his nechasim and he says, oh, I forgot about the fact that I was married, right? So therefore, again, he goes to the racham and he says, listen, I was makdish my property, but I need to unravel something because I have to have some ksuva property. Rabbi Yeshua says that is possible. You can do that. And because of that, we're not choshesh for fraud. Therefore, if ultimately, again, he does decide to divorce his wife, Rabbi Yeshua says the neder is simply unnecessary. So the Gemara says, "V'hatanya." We learned hamakdish nechasa v'aisa love kiddusha asisha. We learned in the Braisa that if a man consecrates his property, but yet he had a ksuva obligation outstanding against him, Rabbi Eliezer Omer kishuma garsha yidor hano. So Rabbi Eliezer says that when he divorces his wife, he should go ahead and take a neder that he can never again marry her. Rabbi Yeshua Omer eno tzarech. Rabbi Yeshua says you don't need to take the net. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, hein hein divrei Beis Shammai, hein hein divrei Beis Hillel. That ultimately, you know, if you look at Rashi, hein hein divrei Shammai, divrei Beis Hillel. Machlokes Lazar, Rabbi Yeshua, hein hein machlokes Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. Then in fact, this machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua is in fact an earlier machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. She Beis Shammai omrim hekdish taos hekdish. Beis Shammai says even if you accidentally consecrate something, the consecration stands. So Rabbi Shammai would say, therefore, in this case, when a man is makdish his entire estate, effectively, what has he done? That's a mistaken consecration. Why is it a mistaken consecration? Because he has an obligation of ksuva, which he has to leave some property unconsecrated. But yet, again, even though it's a mistake, it works. That's the shita of Rabbi Eliezer. And Basil says ultimately again that hekdish taos eino hekdish, and therefore again we could unconsecrate some of the ksuva property, and therefore again there is no need to administer neder. So bottom line, it appears that the machlokis Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah is as follows. What happens if a man is makdish all of his property? Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that although it is quote unquote a mistake, you can't undo it. It's all consecrated. And therefore, again, I will say in Rabbi Eliezer's view, there's a concern that when husband and wife divorce, that there's an element of potential fraud that's happening over here. What's their intention? Their intention is to reclaim some of the ksuva property from the Beis HaMikdash by faking their divorce. After they get divorced, they're going to remarry. They'll now have this property. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says the only way to avoid the fraud is how? Make the husband take a neder, that what? That essentially he's never going to remarry her. Rabbi Yehoshua says it's not necessary. Even a mistaken consecration can be undone. So in other words, there are easier ways to reclaim marital assets than faking a divorce, than staging a divorce. As such, if they do get divorced, Rabbi Yehoshua does not require the husband to take the neder. I will say that's the fundamental machlokes. And I will say, Reb Shimon Gamliel said the same thing, I will say, by the case of an Arev. He just applied this same logic, ultimately, again, to the case of a guarantor, which is that halacha lemaisa, Yaakov's married to Rachel. Reuven is the guarantor for the ksuva. Yaakov's divorcing Rachel. So what happens? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, in this case, Yaakov has to take a neder that he's never going to go ahead and remarry his wife. Why? What are we concerned about? We're concerned about collusion between Yaakov and Rachel, that they're really only divorcing for what purpose? To extract the money from the guarantor. They're going to extract the money from the guarantor, get remarried, and live happily ever after. To avoid any type of fraudulent collusion, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says we make Yaakov take a neder that he is not going to remarry his wife. So the Gemara tells a story. Interesting story. Moshe Bar Artzi, Arva Dekal Sahaba. Moshe Bar Artzi was the guarantor for his daughter-in-law's ksuva. It's interesting, right? So Moshe Ben Artzi's son, who we're going to see, is Rav Huna. Interestingly enough, Rav Huna, right? So Moshe Ben Artzi's son, Rav Huna, marries a girl. Moshe Ben Artzi was very wealthy. He guarantees his daughter-in-law's ksuva. So what happens? So Moshe Artzi Arvidi Kalsiyava. Rav Huna Berei, Tzermi Rabbanam Hava, V'duchi Kalei Milsa. And Rav Huna was the son. He was Moshe Ben Artzi's son. And Rav Huna was very poor. So this is actually interesting. The father was wealthy. We're going to see he did not give his son money. And Rav Huna was poor. So Amar Abaye, says, Leka Dinaspi Eitz L'Rav Huna. Why doesn't anyone give Rav Huna a good piece of advice and tell him, Delegarish L'Dvisu, tell Rav Huna to divorce his wife. Right? Rav Huna has no money. So when the wife wants to get repaid the ksuba, who is she going to go to? She's going to go to her father-in-law. V'titva ksuva, sami avua. She'll claim her ksuva from her father-in-law. Oli haje mihader. And then let them get remarried. Why doesn't anyone tell Rav Huna to go ahead and divorce his wife? Tell him to go ahead and tell her to claim her ksuva from her father. And ultimately, again, go ahead and get remarried. Amar le Rava. Rava says, 1 second. Va'anan yidr ha'notan. But 1 second. Okay. So first of all, we have a Mishnah that says that in such a situation like this, where there is a guarantor for the ksuva, we make the husband take a neder, right, that he's not going to remarry his wife. Also, listen to this. This is incredible. V'abaye. So Abaye is the answer to this also. Atu kol d'megarish v'edin megarish. Does every person who divorces his wife divorce in a basin? In other words, just get two guys together. Divorce your wife, right? Rav Huna, divorce your wife. In other words, we'll say the only time that we would administer this neder is when? Is when if you're divorcing, you know, in a more official atmosphere, in a Beis Din. But the truth is, there's nothing to stop a man from getting two witnesses. Rav Huna knows presumably how to write a get. Write the get, deliver it to your wife in front of two witnesses, have the two witnesses sign, and you're divorced. And she could then collect the ksuva from her father-in-law, right? Rav Huna never made the neder, and they have the money. To which the Gemara says, L'sof iglai milza the kohen hava. It didn't work for a different reason, which is why Rav Huna was a kohen, so that the whole thing would have never worked as well. Amar Abai says, you know what from here people say, Basar anya azla aniyusa. Poverty follows the poor. That's the expression that poverty follows the fortune. Shavuos means some people just have the mazel to be poor. So apparently Rav Huna had the mazel to be poor, right? Even this great idea that Abai had wouldn't work for Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, Umiya amar Abai hachi. But the Gemara says, how could Abai suggest such a thing like this? Right, so essentially, Abai suggesting that Rav Huna scheme against his own father. What a strange thing to do. Vamra Abai himself said, "Ezo rasha arum." Right, who's a cunning evil person? This is ultimately someone who tells someone else to sell property like Rav Shimon Gamliel. So I'll say Rashi points out, this Rav Shimon Gamliel is an interesting case where you have the following situation. If let's say Yaakov's on his deathbed and Yaakov says, I hereby leave my property to Reuven. And ultimately, again, when Reuven dies, whatever's left over of that property goes to Shimon. You could do a gift like that. So we'll say, so ultimately, again, the only thing that goes to Shimon is if there's any property left over from Reuven. So technically speaking, if Reuven were to sell off that property and keep the proceeds, there would be nothing that passes down to Shimon. So Abaye says, what's the example of a cunning Rasha? Someone who tells Reuven, Reuven, use up the property, sell whatever is left, so nothing goes to Shimon. Technically speaking, has Reuven done anything wrong? No, but that's not the way. We don't advise people to do things that don't seem right. So how could Abai suggest to Rav Huna over here, divorce your wife, have her collect the ksuva from your father, remarry her, and mazel tov, you could live happily ever after, now with the ksuva money in the bank. To which the Gemara says, berei shiny. So we'll say, it could very well be that because this was Rav Huna's father, now again, we don't understand the circumstances as to why Rav Huna's father, why Moshe ben Artzi was not helping his son. It's not immediately clear why that's happening. I will say what is clear is the father has a lot of money and the son is destitute. Obviously, because if you're suggesting this Eitzah, it means they're in pretty bad financial shape. Why Moshe ben Artzi is not helping his son? I don't know. So the first answer the Gemara says is that maybe because this was his child, Abai felt, listen, the father should be helping his kid anyway. Remember again, Rav Huna is not wasting his time on the golf course. He's Rav Huna. Right? So maybe Abai just felt, even though this does not look right and it's not really right, because this is a father and a son, and for some reason the father should be helping his son anyway, but he's not. Abai felt justified in doing this. Bitzura me rabbanan shiny. Hebo says another interesting answer. Maybe also because this is a Talmud Chacham, and Rav Huna was one of the Gedolei Hador, Abai felt that it was justifiable for him to employ this particular approach. Although again, I would say one can make the counter argument as well, that because Rav Huna was such a high profile person, to do such a thing like this would not have been so appropriate. Okay, Abai somehow felt justified. Abai was not pretending that this was a normative piece of Eitzah, but he felt either because Rav Huna was such a great Talmud Chacham or because he was Moshe ben Artzi's son that it was justifiable to dispense this advice. Either way, didn't work out because Rav Huna was a Kohen, and as such, again, the Eitzah did not work. B'seifuk lei d'ariv d'ksuva lo mishtabit. So we'll say maybe there's a different reason, right? So we'll say we're going to now make an interesting distinction between an Ariv and a Kablon. An Arev, Rabbi said, which literally means Arev and Kablon both translate as a guarantor. They both translate the same way. But as we're going to see, there are different levels of responsibility. But I want to say something different. An Arev, what we call an Arev, is not really responsible for the ksuva. We'll discuss why that is in just a moment. Amadeis, to which the Gemara says, no, Kablon Hava. Ultimately, again, really, Moshe ben Artzi was not an Ari for the Ksuva. He's what we call a Kablon. We'll say, so again, like I said, I don't know if there's a better English word. I think they both normally translate as guarantor, right? But a Kablon, as we're going to see, is a heightened level of guarantorship. So, honey, chaleman damar Kablon, afa gavdeles le nechasim lelove mishtabed. So we'll say, this makes sense, according to the opinion that says that a Kablon obligates himself to pay the Ksuva or the debt, even if the borrower or the debtor does not have any property. Elamam da'amr islay mishtabed lesley lo mishtabed ma'ikal meymar. Rabbi says, according to the opinion, it says that halacha lamaisa, a kablon himself only commits if the debtor, or in this case, the husband, has property. What is their tibbo? Says, in other words, this is actually a fascinating machlokas. When someone is a kablon, someone is a guarantor, when do people commit themselves to really pay a debt? So this machlokas, some say a kablon really only commits himself if there's some feasible possibility that the debtor can pay. So if the debtor could possibly pay and the kablan's only backup, that's when the kablan says, fine, I commit myself. But if the debtor has no property himself, so essentially, again, then the kablan will say, then it's not fair to call me the guarantor. I'm not the guarantor. What am I? What am I? I'm effectively the debtor myself because you have no property. A kablan would not be mishabed himself. Michael Amemar, Sibai Yisema. So possibility is, Rav Huna Habili. No. At some point in time, Rav Huna did have property. Vishtaduf. It got ruined. It got ruined. Vishtaduf literally can mean windswept or flooded. He had property at some point in time. So again, the reason why Moshe ben Aretzi, the father, was willing to be the kablan of the ksuva was because at some point in time, Rav Huna did have some property. Something happened afterwards that caused that to be lost. Vibayisim, the other possibility is, Abba legabe brei shabda mishabe nafshe. Others say, what parents won't do for their children, right? So we'll say that a father will be mishabed himself as a kablan for the son, even if the son doesn't have property, under normal circumstances. So halacha lemaisa, you're right, an arev or a kablan we'll focus on, will only be mishabed himself if the debtor has property. But if halacha lemaisa, again, for a father, for a son, he'll guarantee the debt, even if the son doesn't have property. The itmar, because we learned, we'll say, here we go, arev diksuva, Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed. We'll say, an Arev, if someone is an Arev, which I will say, again, like I said, both translate as guarantor, but really, you know, so without getting into the technical details, so an Arev and a Kablon have different levels of responsibility. So now the Braisa says as follows, if a person agrees to serve as an Arev for a Ksuva, Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed. Everyone agrees that what? That he's not really on the hook for anything. And we'll say, now what does that mean? Right, can you imagine this? So right, Yaakov and Rachel are getting married. I decide, you know what, I'm going to be the Arev, the guarantor on the Ksuva. Then what happens? They get divorced. So Yaakov has no money. Rachel comes to the Galactic. So what do I tell her? No. I didn't really mean it. I just said it, but I'm not really obligated. We'll say, what does that mean? This is amazing. Look at Rashi. Arev the Ksuva, Divrei HaKol Lo Mishtabed, Rashi says, the mitzvah ka'avad v'lezavgam, v'lo midi michsala, d'halo yavizuzi. But at the end of the day, sometimes what we just like to do is we like to give people chizuk to get married. People need chizuk in different ways. Right? Some people just, you know, they just can't move themselves forward. So some people need reassurance in all levels. Sometimes people need financial reassurance also. So what do I, the well-meaning Arei, tell the Chassid and Kala? Don't worry about it. You're going to be great. And Chas v'Shalom, something ever happens, just come to me. But I didn't really mean it. Right? What I just wanted to do is I wanted to give them the chizuk. Ultimately, again, it was my wedding gift. It's chizuk. Chizuk is the best gift, right? It's free and an inexhaustible supply. I just wanted to give you chizuk, tell you everything's going to be okay. Ah, you're getting divorced now? Okay. That's lacharaba. Right? I'm not on the hook. I'm not on the hook for that. So kablon, Rabbi, I'll say, on the other hand, kablon de balchov, divya kol mishtabit. We will say a kablon who undertakes the obligation to go ahead and guarantee a debt. We're switching gears for just a moment. Come to Bachov, David Akomishtab. Everyone agrees. Ultimately, again, is liable to secure the debt, to pay the debt in the event that the debtor is unable to. Arev de Bachov, a kablon de ksuva pligi. We will say, where does machlokis come up? About an arev for a debt and a kablon for a ksuva. So we'll say, so some say that in the case of an arif for a debt and a kablan for a ksuva, as long as the debtor has property, both of these individuals will agree to secure the debt. Lesley, if the debtor has no property, lo mishtabit, ultimately they will not secure the debt. The ikulamandomer, others explain, afagab the lesley mishtabit. Even though halacha lemaisa, in both of these cases, the arev for the balchov and the kablan for the ksuva, even if the debtor doesn't have property, they commit themselves. V'hilcha sabakulu, and I will say the halacha in general with all of these cases is af agav delesle nami mishtabid. I will say in general the way we hold is that if you commit yourself to guarantee a debt, whether the borrower has property or not, you, the guarantor, are on the hook. Levar, with one exception, me'arev diksuva. Rabbi Moshe said the one exception to this will be the case of an arev by a ksuba. The afagav the islay. Bosa, in that case, even if the husband has property or had property at some point in time to secure the ksuba debt, lo mishtabit. We don't assume the guarantor really committed to guarantee the ksuba. Why? My taima, mitzvah ka'avid. He's only doing a mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? He's giving people chizuk to get married. And no one really suffered as a result of his commitment. So we'll say, this is really quite fascinating. So we'll say, the way the Gemara is passing is like this. That in general, when it comes to a balchov, stamadet, whether you committed yourself as an arif, right, or a kablon, whether the borrower, the debtor, had property or didn't have property, if you commit yourself as a guarantor to a debt, then what? You are a guarantor for the debt. Again, we're not getting into the technical differences over here between an arev and a kablon. That's not necessary for our sugya right now. When it comes to a ksuva, if you commit yourself as a kablon, then what? You are on the hook to guarantee the ksuva. If you guarantee yourself, if you commit yourself as an arev, which is a lower form of guarantor, then in that case, whether the husband does have property, didn't have property, halach l'maisa, we don't take that as a real commitment to secure the ksuba debt. Rather, you are just doing a mitzvah, encouraging people to build a bayis naman b'Yisrael. Beautiful. Hu gavra. We'll say there was a man. Dizabninu l'nechasei v'kagar shel dvisu. We'll say another interesting case. There was a man. We'll say this is a different kind of case. He sold off all of his property, and then he got divorced. So we'll say, so obviously, what happens in a case like this? So remember again, so in a case like this, a wife is a first position creditor, right? So a man, again, so she had a pre-existing lien on any property that he sold. He decided to sell off all of his holdings. Now he gets divorced. So his wife, therefore, what? Has the right to go after one of the properties or however many properties she needs to satisfy her ksuba debt and to reclaim it as her own because her claim preceded any of the buyers. Fine. So what happens? Shalcha Rav Yosi Bei Drava L'Kamei Drava. So we'll say, so now, the fact that she could collect, that's not a problem. That's fine. What's the shayla? Rav Yosi, the shayla is, so Shalcha Rav Yosi Bei Drava L'Kamei Drava Papa, Arif Tanan, Hekdesha. So we'll say, what does the Mishnah say? So the Mishnah says, if a man was makdish all of his property, or a man went ahead and had a guarantor for his ksuva, and now he's going to divorce his wife. So Rabbi says, what did Rabbi Eliezer say in the Mishnah? Rabbi says, what does he have to do? Let's focus on the case of Hekdesh just a moment. What does he have to do? He has to take a neder that he's not going to remarry her, because what are we concerned about? That they're going to collude to defraud Hekdesh. What about in this case over here? Mau, Rabbi says, wait, what about Lokeach Mau? Well, this is an interesting case. So Yaakov sold off all of his property. Now he's divorcing Rachel. Rachel's going to go, she has a right to go out and collect, without getting into technicalities of who she collects from, but she has a right to collect one of the sold properties. So we'll say, are we concerned about collusion? Are we concerned that they're going to get divorced? She's going to seize property from one of the buyers. They're both saying, now granted, one of the buyers is going to have what? Is now going to have recourse against Yaakov. But Yaakov could say, I have no money, right? He could say, I don't have any money. They're going to move away somewhere. So are we concerned for fraudulent collusion in this case? And would we require Yaakov to take a neder that he's not going to remarry his wife? Amalei, so he said, Tana kiruchna nechashev elezel. What is the Tana like a perfume salesman that he has to state every single case? Yes, of course it applies in this case. In other words, we'll say what he's answering over here is, the Mishnah is teaching you a principle. And the principle is that in any case where there is a concern for fraudulent collusion, then what? Halacha l'maisa, we make the husband take a neder that he's not going to remarry his wife. Nardai Amri, Nardai say no. So disnan tanan, lo tanan. The Mishnah does not include a case of sale. Because it does not include a case of where the husband sold off his holdings, therefore what? Therefore, Allah l'maisa, he is not obligated to take a neder that he's not going to remarry her. Amra Misharshia Maitam Dinardoi. What's Dinardoi's logic? To which the Gemara says, Bishlam Hekdish Mishum Rabach the Hekdish. So I'll say, in the case of Hekdish, I understand why I have to take a neder, because we don't want Hekdish to suffer. Arev Nami Mitzvahu Da'avid V'lo Midi Chasrei. It was in the case of an Arev, ultimately a guy is being nice by securing the debt, so we should protect the Arev. Elo lokech, but I will say in a case where a person purchases property, michti, midi yada de kol chad v'chad ikalek suva, amai nezel v'nezbun. I will say every single person knows that when you purchase something from a married man, then what? Then what? You are purchasing encumbered property. You know that, right? I will say anytime you do business with a man who is married, that means there is a, right behind every married man who does business, there is a woman who has a claim. Right? So we'll say, so again, you should know that. You should know that. And again, and we'll say, this is actually very interesting, that if you think about this, in the historical real estate market, right, every single time you are doing business with a married man, the first question you ask, you almost have to ask is, what's the story? I don't mean to pry. How's your marriage? Right, how are things? Right, all in all seriousness, what you had to ask, we'll say, most probably what people generally did was, if you were in real estate, is you are miyached karka. You could do this, right? Remember again, in the absence of specified property, a woman has a lien against everything. You could lift that lien on everything as long as you allocate it towards something. So bepashtos, if you were in real estate, what you did is you set aside this, right? My wife, I love you. We should be happy until 120. In the event that things don't work out, that's yours, right? That's yours. And as long as that has enough value to satisfy the ksuva, ultimately it works. So say the nar done. No. The neder din only applies by Beis HaMikdash because we want to look out for the Beis HaMikdash. We want to look out for the Arif. But at the end of the day, where the guy's buying property, listen, buyer beware. You should know when you're buying from a married man, there's a lien against that. If you don't take care to go ahead and protect yourself about that, we're not making the man make a neder. And we'll say that's the Raman Paskins. The neder case only applies in the case ultimately of Hekdish and in the case of the guarantor, but does not apply in the case of the sale. Mishnah, we'll say at least read the Mishnah. Hamaktish nechasa v'aisalav ksuvas isha. If a man was maktish his property, they're both saying, now the way Rashi understands this case is that halacha l'maisa, he had already divorced his wife. Right? Yaakov divorced Rachel, didn't yet pay her ksuva. Before he pays her ksuva, what does he do? He consecrates his property to the Beis HaMikdash. Very, very generous guy. And what happens? Baisal ksuva sisha, or Balchov. Or Rabbo say, for that matter, there is a Balchov. Ein ha'ish yechol ligbos ksuva semenekdash. Rabbo say, now in this case, the truth is, in this case where he already owed his ex-wife money, the truth is the hekdish doesn't work. Right? You can't be makdish something that is not yours. So if he divorces her and he already owes her a ksuva payment, or for that matter, he has a debt that has become due, he is being makdish something that does not belong to him. So effectively, the hekdish allocation does not work. But watch this. So ina ishi yichod ligvos ksuvasem in a hekdish, v'lo balchov eschovo elaha poda. So what's actually very interesting, even though on a technical level, the Hekdish allocation does not work, we don't just let the man pull back the property from Hekdish, rather, he has to redeem it. He has to redeem it. Hekdish Tishem, Manan Rabbah says, we're going to see, he only has to redeem it for a very nominal and minimal amount, but he has to redeem it. Hekdish Tishem, Manan, v'hayachova mea mana. If he was makdish, the amount of 90 mana and the debt was 100, Mosif owed dinar upode es hanechasim. He adds on one dinar and redeemed the nechasim. We'll see that case. So, upode es hanechasim ha'ilu amanas litim li'ishak suvasa ulabalcho veschavo. So, Rabbi, in this case over here, he had a debt that was 90 mana. I'm sorry, he had property that was 90 mana. The debt was 100 mana. He adds on an extra dinar and redeems this property ultimately to give it to the wife for a ksuva or for the balchov to satisfy it. So we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up a mirror session with the details of this Mishnah tomorrow. Hold on. Mirror session, we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow.